Season 2, Episode 7, Double Abundando. There's two Abundandos in this. And it's a famous face. But
it's a famous what?
It's a famous face, oh, okay. Yeah.
My question was, does it also have anything to do with the other story that's going on in the episode?
Wait, you're talking about with Jimmy Smits and the kid?
No, isn't this the one that has... Yeah, this is the dude that has HIV, who's sticking it to women and not telling them he has AIDS.
But how does that have anything to do with a double abundando?
I don't know, like double entendre?
I just don't see how that makes sense, but okay.
I don't know, I'm just asking questions.
The opening of this episode, Sylvia comes in to let Andy know that his fish have died.
Yeah, the breaker blew. Her apartment couldn't handle all the new wattage, because he's moving in.
Mm-hmm.
And his fish tank blew the fucking breaker, and the breaker popped, and all of his fish died because the filter stopped working. So Andy, being Andy, freaks the fuck out.
He kind of shuts down, and he doesn't seem angry, but he's obviously frustrated, and he does that thing where like he just is like, I don't want to talk about it, and just tries to stay alone and away from the situation.
Yeah.
Also in the opening, right after Sylvia...
But you could tell he's super pissed about it.
Yeah, absolutely. Sylvia leaves, and I don't know if it's in the opening. It is in the opening. Donna Abundando lets Greg know that their sister's going to come stay with them. And this is the first time we realize that Greg and Donna are, like, living together.
Yeah, and it doesn't seem that, like... I don't know. I kind of took it that, like, Greg doesn't seem to know a lot about Donna.
No, personally. Absolutely not.
Like, other than they just fuck each other a lot.
Which is... It's so weird because there's no... we know that Greg is divorcing from his wife at, like, the end of season one. But we didn't really get any idea of where he would go. And then just in the beginning of this episode, they're like, oh, yeah, he's just living with Donna. That's the situation. Which is like... Well, they weren't, like... They haven't been together a long time. It's not like it was a relationship that was a long-standing relationship. And then he moved in with her. It was, like, kind of like an F-buddy. That suddenly became your live-in partner after your divorce.
Well, I think there's a lot of infatuation. There's not a lot of love there. They think they love each other, and they're super, like, boning each other, but I don't think they're super in love, if that makes sense.
Well, they're together, and they're living together, and she just says, oh, my sister's gonna be in town, and Greg does the, like, wait, she's gonna stay with us? And it was like, yeah, blah, 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 this and that, Then there are gunshots outside.
Coming from the school across the street.
Sipowicz is on it because Sylvia just walked outside, so he's afraid.
Yeah, doesn't he yell, Sylvia just walked out of here.
Yeah, Sylvia just walked out of here. And then they run out. Also, a little cameo by Detective Bill Clark in the scene where they run out of the station house.
Okay.
He's one of the cops that runs out with Jimmy Smits. And it's kind of weird because... I read the book, and I saw the pictures on the back, well, before I read it. And then they said in the book, they're like, oh, by the way, Detective Bill Clark's going to have a little background role in the season two. And then I saw his face, and I was like, oh, shit, that's Bill Clark just killing it on NYPD Blue by running to a crime scene. But it shows a Puerto Rican kid who has been shot in a schoolyard. And
yeah, in the middle of the basketball court.
And they're trying to make sense of the situation, and one of the school guards pulls Nick, who is the kid who was dealing with some trouble, out of a bathroom, and he has a gun that they think is the murder weapon.
Now.
What? Now.
Does Nick bother you as an actor?
Yeah, he's not a good job. He's not doing a good job.
Yeah, okay. I'm glad I'm not the only one.
His name is Adam Han Bird, and we mentioned it last episode. He is the kid from Jumanji, who played a young Alan Parrish. I don't think he has any other roles that anyone would know him from, but he doesn't do that great of a job in the show.
No, it's weird. Like, he's weird. I don't know. I didn't like him.
It goes to the theme song with just Jimmy Smith saying, like, leave him on the steps, because now he's caught this murder case. Which happened across the street, and the prime suspect is now the kid that he was trying to help out. So it's not looking good for him. after the break, Lesniak and Martinez get a call about a guy that was shot at named Eddie.
And he comes back later. He is a detective later and a very long, weird, like, story that involves Kirkendall's husband and shit.
That's like, right. That was played by Scott Cohen. I don't know why. I looked up who he was because I thought he was a famous face because I could have swore I'd seen him before. And then I think it's only in other episodes of NYPD Blue that I've seen him. We also cut back to the station house where Jimmy Smith's Simone is trying to interrogate Nick because he doesn't believe he did it. It's one of those things where, like, Fancy and Sipowicz are like, well, I mean, he's got it. Like, the bag of crap is in his hands for the murder, unless you can get him to roll on whoever actually did it.
Like, the kid wasn't even good at hiding the fact that he did it. That, I think, was the most infuriating part for me.
Yeah, he was just playing racist and hard like he is racist and hard, like he isn't. And it's so obvious that, like, he's just a kid trying to keep up appearances.
It reminds me a lot of how people act today politically.
Okay, so the Eddie story. I wanted to talk about this because I think the nugget of gold in this episode is going to be on the Eddie AIDS story more than anything. Because they're hanging out with Eddie and they're, like, trying to understand what happened. Like, he got shot at, but he's, like, acting like it's no big deal. And he's clearly hiding something. At least I thought so. Every time they're like, she's like, oh, you were shot at. And he's like, no, it's probably nothing, man. It was probably nothing. It's no big deal. And then, like, he pulls off his jacket and there's, like, blood and he's bleeding. And they're like, how do you not know that you're bleeding?
He's like, yeah, he's, like, super calm.
And weird.
Yeah, like, he's, like... It's like when you watch a movie, like, you watch, like, the movie Taken or something. And, like, Liam Neeson's in that situation where he has to, like... He's just following that, like, rapper or song producer around, and he goes into Taken mode, and you're kind of like, oh, this guy's done this before. That's what it kind of felt like. Like, oh, this guy's been shot at before, and he knows how to deal with it.
Yeah, like, it was either that, like, and when you understand the story, you're like, oh, you realize he's just trying to hide what's really going on. Like, who he really is to this girl. And she starts saying, oh no, it's probably your ex-girlfriend who's crazy, who keeps calling you and saying that you're a horrible person.
Yeah.
And won't stop stalking you. They look into it, and they go to meet this girl, who, for famous faces, not that big a deal. It's Noelle Parker, which, if her face looks familiar, it's because she's the girl from Ernest Saves Christmas. It bothered me for a good 20 minutes the first time I saw this episode, because I was like, her face is so familiar, but
wait,
I have...
His girlfriend now?
No, the new girlfriend. Not the new girlfriend. The first girlfriend they go see, and who reveals that she has AIDS, and she believes Eddie had it.
In the office?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that girl, that face, I was like, I've seen her in something, I cannot put my finger on it, and it's gonna drive me insane. And when you go to IMDb and, like, look by name, her known for is Ernest Saves Christmas. And it's like, oh shit, she was the girl in Ernest Saves Christmas. Not that big a movie, and not that good of movie. But if you know it, then you know her face. But she says, I have AIDS. And I believe Eddie gave it to me and knows that he has it. Which is reckless endangerment.
Yeah, but imagine, like, think about it. That shit had been... People have been doing that shit in the early 90s a lot.
What, getting people infected with AIDS?
Yeah, because they didn't want to deal with it. And they didn't want to, like, believe it.
So they just, like, don't, like, try not to acknowledge that it's even happening.
Yeah, and they don't, like, take care of themselves. They don't wear a condom. Shit like that.
And then the story goes further where they meet another one of his ex-girlfriends who confirm that she has AIDS and she's flat-out dying on a gurney.
Yeah, this bitch was dying.
Straight dying. They get the implication, like, oh no, this guy's into drugs, he's an asshole, he knows that he's doing this to women. And the reason I'm speeding through this story is because I wanted to ask an important question. They bring Eddie to the station house with his girlfriend, and they split him up, and then they ask them, Martinez asks Eddie, like, hey, have you been tested for HIV, or have you been tested for AIDS or HIV? And he's like, well, no, I'm super healthy. Like, do I look like I have AIDS? He's like, well, that's interesting, because all of your last girlfriends who we've looked into, they have AIDS, and they're pretty sure you gave it to them. And he flips out, and then he's like, well, what about the drug dealing? And he flips out, and blah, blah, blah. Now, here's the question. Lesniak is with Dory, who is the current girlfriend. And she's trying to play good cop to her and say, hey, like, how much do you actually know about Eddie? I know that you're in love with him, but, like, how much do you really know who he is? And then she kind of has, like, a weird mental break, even in that conversation, where she goes, like, no, he's healthy. Like, you wouldn't know, you wouldn't even think if you've seen him without a shirt on. And then she gets kind of quiet and weird. And then Eddie comes up dead because he's been shot by that woman.
Because
she found out she had AIDS. Now, here's the question. Dory, is she the psycho chick? Like, is she just a psycho chick in real life and she just happened to be, like, in the path of Eddie? And it wasn't actually, like, the AIDS. It was her being, like, a crazy psycho chick. Because even when you see her in the very beginning of the episode, which I didn't notice, she's really manic and crazy and, like, saying, we know who did this. It was your ex-girlfriend who won't stop talking to you and calling me and this and that. And he's just trying to calm her down. But is it possible that she's actually crazy and that this tipped her over the edge to just murder him and then...
No, I think it tipped her... I think it tipped her to crazy, to do something crazy.
But you don't think she was crazy to begin with?
I don't think she was crazy. I think she was fine. And then I think what happened is that she added everything up. Like, him being weird, all of these girlfriends calling all the time, people shooting at him, stuff like that. And I think she was just like, oh shit. And then when she found out she had AIDS, that was just the last, the final straw.
That was just the final straw.
And it pushed her over the edge.
I don't know.
I don't think she was crazy. I think she got the craziness from the AIDS.
She got crazy AIDS?
She went AIDS crazy.
Are you HIV positive?
I'm 100% HIV positive that this is the way we should do it. That is the best cancer show ever.
Oh, man.
Have you seen the new South Park, real quick?
No, I haven't seen it. I'm afraid to watch it.
I haven't either. I want to.
I've seen all of them up to the newest one.
Yeah, they're pretty good this year, too.
Yeah, the show is just killing it all the time. To Nick's storyline, they bring in the kid they think is responsible, which is the kid that was bullying Nick beforehand. And
played by Giovanni Ribisi.
And his dad is Ron Dean, who, another face that I couldn't get out of my head until I knew where he was from. He was in The Dark Knight, and he was the cop that Two-Face...
He's the bad cop.
Yeah, that Two-Face straight shoots in that bar. Spoiler alert for Dark Knight. And they interview the kid and the dad, and I don't know, like, maybe they're just really good actors. I believed them, like, a lot more than Nick and his mom. You know what I mean?
Yeah, he was really good.
Like, a working dad who can't always be there, who's just trying his best. Maybe the mom's not in the picture anymore or something.
And the way him and Giovanni Ribisi act together
was a very, like, dad-son.
Yeah, and the way he, like, yelled at him and stuff, it was really good.
Because in the beginning, he's very much in his son's corner that's like, if he said he didn't do it, he didn't do it. And then as, like, his dad's hearing more about the story, he's like, did you do this? Are you lying to me? And just like that, the line reading of, are you lying to me, was such a dad, like such a thing a dad would say to his son.
Yeah. Because I think at that point his dad knew.
Yeah, that something had happened and he just gotta.
Yeah. But then what I really liked is after the whole thing, he like yells at him and all that stuff, and then he starts crying, and so then he just hugs him, which I thought was cool.
Another famous face, the other storyline, Deborah Messing shows up as Dana Abbandando. She comes in and she says hi to Donna, and then she's immediately, like, perving out on Jimmy Smith's, which is understandable. And then even Greg Medavoy, which was kind of weird, because...
Yeah, that I didn't get. Like, was she attracted to Greg because Donna has that unlock? Like, you know what I mean?
Well, that ends up happening when they go back to Donna and Greg's place. Because for some weird reason, Greg is making dinner. And Donna is, like, out, and Dana is in the house, or in the apartment, which doesn't really make sense. Why did it work out that way? Because wouldn't Donna and Greg get off at work at the same time? What would Donna go to get while Greg is making dinner? Like, it didn't make sense in my mind. But Dana kind of gets these weird, like, sexy eyes for Greg, who's in a goddamn, like... he's in a
he's wearing
apron. He's like wearing a straight up woman's apron and like making dinner, and then she like walks up to him and she's taller than he is, and she tries to put the moves on Greg, and she's like, oh, maybe if you just hug me for a little while. And she's also in a robe, like wearing no clothes.
That's what's weird, is she's in a robe basically wearing underwear, and she was like, yeah, and she was like, yeah, this is cool.
And, of course, Donna comes back, and then the awkward thing happens where they start fighting. And it's even, she even says, like, you did this to all my boyfriends in middle school. And it's like, can't, like, aren't we adults now?
I feel like... That's what I understand. It's like, why is she, I don't know why she's going after Greg. Like, I don't get it.
For a second, I thought it was maybe because he represents, like, a stable relationship. But if she's been listening to Donna, like, he's just got out of a divorce. He's not killing it in the bachelor department. He's just like a guy who is rebounding from now divorce of with kids.
And I don't know, like what? I don't know. And I've never really understood like siblings going after other siblings, like significant others.
Yeah, guys don't do that, I don't think.
That's weird.
I think that's more of a like, sister's thing. Maybe,
but like even a sister's thing, I think that's a very I think that's a very sexist and wrong stereotype, because I don't think sisters go after each other's men either.
Well, it has to happen somewhere. It has to be based on some kind of truth.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
Well, because like think about this: if you're a dude, like
I haven't met the right sisters. I don't know.
Like we're brothers. We have a significant age difference where, like, that would never be a problem. But if you think about it, if you're the younger brother going after your older brother's significant other, one, you're probably going to get the shit beat out of you. Two, like, you look like an ass because you're younger. That's kind of dumb. And if you're older going after your younger brother's girl, then you're a creep. But with sisters, it just seems different. I don't know.
It just, it's weird. It doesn't make sense to me, and it's weird.
It doesn't make sense, and it's weird. That's
like, she just, like, she showed up.
Ready.
And was, like, ready to go.
To go with Greg Medavoy, of all people.
Yeah, you know what I mean? It's like, she showed up, she said, let's do this.
I and also, there is an underlying idea that she was just still super jazzed up from just seeing Simone.
That's true, too. She still could be, have that, like, Simone boner.
Simone
boner.
Simoner.
But really, and then giving it to the wrong person.
Speaking of Simone, there is one quote I don't think I wrote it down correctly. Because at one point they have to talk to a teacher regarding the Nick case. Because he's the teacher that called in the 911 call. And he's not giving anything up because he's too concerned about his car and like what the kids will do to him at the school. So Sipowicz at one point gives him a little business, says, I don't think you were going hard enough because I don't think you want this case to clear quickly because it'll hurt, like, the kid.
I think that was the implication. That was weird, too, because, I don't know, I'm kind of on Jimmy Smith's side. Like, if you keep pushing the guy, he's just going to get pissed off, you know?
And then he's just going to shut down and not want to talk to you at all. If you give him some room, he'll think about it and then you can come back. And maybe he'll have something to say when he's thought about it. But at one point, because this seemed a little gratuitous, Jimmy Smith says, you can kiss my French Portuguese ass.
Mm-hmm.
That's unnecessary, kind of, isn't it? Like, I don't know why they wrote it that way.
Well, to give you some kind, it's to give you a little bit more background into who Simone is. Like you're just learning about him, you know.
Well, that's true, but it's
you're also learning that showing that he's super proud of who he is and what his heritage is, you know.
Also, that he'll go toe to toe with Sipowicz.
Yeah,
But I don't know. Like, I guess that's true. And when I look back on it, that is the reason they did it. But when you think about it, like, for half a second, I was like, oh, they just needed to tell the audience the reason he's brown, but, like, looks so Greek and, like, statuesque is because he's French and Portuguese. Like, we have to give a reason why he looks like he belongs in the black and white section of the Abercrombie and Fitch catalog, because you don't know that he's brown. But, because, like, I don't know, I felt like it was gratuitous, but that might just be my PC post.
No, I think in a storytelling way, they were just letting you know who he was and, like, who he is and that he's proud of himself, and I don't know, I didn't really think it was that weird. I just took it more as, like you said earlier, him standing up to Sipowicz more than anything.
Mm-hmm. Shows that he won't be pushed around by Sipowicz, just like Sipowicz doesn't get pushed around by anybody.
No.
There is a scene with, it turns out, with Eddie. His girlfriend Dory shoots Eddie, and then Sylvia and Lesniak and Martinez are talking about what she'll be sentenced. And Sylvia says, oh, she'll go up against this, which will take a plea, and this and that. And then Lesniak, sometimes the show, and all cop shows do this, where they'll write a line, and you know after they wrote it, they were like, fuck yeah, we got this, guys. And, like, high-five each other. And in this one, it was when Sylvia's like, oh, she won't even get sentences. She won't even get sentenced, because blah, 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 once they hear it. And then Lesniak goes, she already got her sentence. And, like, walks away. And I was like, yeah, they were so happy they wrote that down.
Like, I mean, she kind of already did.
And it's true, but just, like, that like, CSI Law and Order way of just, like, saying it before they walk away. And then usually, if this was Law and Order, then it would turn to black and go, dum-dum, like that bullshit. But since it's NYPD Blue, they don't, you know, steep to that level. They just cut to streets and then start playing the drums.
Fucking Law and Order, man.
Is there anything of this episode that you wanted to talk about? Just because I think I'm through my notes, so I don't have any.
No, it's just the slow building relationship of Simone and Sipowicz.
Yeah, there is that moment where they, I didn't write it down, but I know what happens. Where, because Sipowicz kind of twerks, that's not the right word. He kind of gets pissy with Simone about not going harder on the teacher, and then Simone gives it right back. And they're both going through a tough time. Like, Simone might have to book his friend's son, who's a shithead, but he's still a kid. And Sipowicz lost all his fish. And they have a moment in the bathroom where Sipowicz is like, hey, man, I'm sorry. Like, it's hard for guys to communicate who haven't worked with each other before, because we don't know how each other works, but I lost all my fish today. which is such a funny thing, because it's like this, it's Sip.
I forgot about that. I forgot he kind of has like a little kid moment.
Where he's like, I'm sorry. Like, it's so cool because they write Sipowicz so well, and it's acted so well, that he's like just a blue collar guy trying to explain interpersonal communication in the workplace. But he's like, look, it's just hard for people who haven't worked together to understand where everybody's coming from. Like, I lost my fish today. And it's like, it's so funny. It's good
but
stuff.
I will say it's a step up for Sipowicz and how he handled it. Because he, in one of that, near the end, he was like, told Sylvia it was an accident, it happens. Like, we'll take care of it. Mm-hmm. But normal Sipowicz would have wanted to run away and everything, you know?
Mm-hmm. He's also growing as a recovering alcoholic, so he's learning how to deal with his issues better. So yeah, it's a good episode. It's building of the partnership that's probably the best partnership in the show of Sipowicz and Simone. Anything else?
No.
Alrighty, every episode of NYPD Blue Balls and Asher Brothers Podcast is on asherbrotherspodcast.com. The show's on iTunes and Stitcher. We're on Twitter at Asher Bros Pod and Asher Brothers Podcast on Instagram. We don't have a lot of followers, and honestly, we don't post that much, mostly when new episodes are coming out. But if you speak to us, I do, and you know what? Most people, they do call to actions, so they get interaction with the crowd. I don't think we have a lot of female listeners, but if you have any interaction about sisters fighting over a guy or brothers fighting over a girl, let us know that that's real, because I've never seen it or experienced it.
And yeah, like, and I don't even know. I mean, I know one instance personally of like that happening, like between sisters. Like, it happened to a friend of mine's. That's just because one of the sisters is a bitch. You know what I mean? Like, that's 100% why I think that that one happened. 100%. But... oh, 100%. Like, 100% that's why I think that one happened. But, like, that's it. I don't know, unless, like, people keep it quiet, but I've never really heard of anything like that, and I've never... I don't know, it's just weird. But if you have, like, I'd like to hear...
Okay. Thanks for listening, and keep watching NYPD Blue.